Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Much news the last couple of weeks. And Mike Cosentino.
Right here.
Mike and Gary LeMaster are going to be talking about that. And we have a guest with us in the studio today, Steve Ryan, who's something of an expert in terms of dealing with estates, Social Security, affordable health care, and that kind of thing. And Steve, just say hello. And
good morning.
So we'll let these guys rant and rave about all the strange occurrences of the last 2 weeks, because last week we had Tim Alinsky and we talked about Cottonwood politics. We had a very pleasant time and a very we'll let them get going on what the hell is going on in Washington.
You know, you got a couple of guys here that don't have, you know, exactly access to the top seats of power. But a lot of people, I don't even like talking about this. It's like I want to take the Zen approach. The more we talk about it, the more everybody talks about it, the more it seems to be happening. So start working backwards. He goes on Twitter this morning to announce that he's going to name his Supreme Court justice via Twitter. You know, not exactly the word unprecedented. If I see it one more time, my head's going to explode.
You're saying his gravitas. You're saying his gravitas is lacking.
To say the least.
A shorter way of saying it is, this is not normal.
This is not normal. And a lot of news outlets that, put that in caps. This is not normal. So the refugee ban, the completely un-American move, that there's some support out there for in certainly Red America. The seven countries that are banned from travel.
Notably absent from the list of Muslim countries that have refugees or immigrants banned are all of those countries that Trump has businesses in. and of the seven, we've not had a single terrorist attack from an immigrant from any of the seven, but we've had multiple attacks from the countries that he left off the list.
And that's, why is that? Just as, it was kind of a nutty plan, wasn't it? It looks like they boiled it down. They didn't think it through. They didn't even talk to Homeland Security before they put it out.
Didn't
check the legality.
This is how fascism works. The political leaders make the deals with business, and you get these wacko results that are probably, at least in part, unconstitutional. You do have some judges putting stays on the decision, these executive orders that he criticized Obama and the right criticized Obama so much for as a dictator seem to be his main staple of how he's going to govern is via executive order. Forget about Congress, forget about the Senate, forget about those other 535 people that are elected. The one guy that lost the popular vote is going to make all the decisions.
Lost in the turmoil is the fact that refugees, I mean, these are people that are suffering, tremendously and been dislocated. And lost in the turmoil is the fact that no refugee in the United States has been guilty of a terrorist attack. And the most difficult path to getting into the U.S. from another country is as a refugee, because it's about a two-year process of vetting. And anything else, you can come in on a visa, you can sneak in the country. Those are the easiest paths, but the most difficult is to come in as a refugee.
Particularly if you're a Syrian refugee, right? I mean, there already is extreme vetting, so what is extreme vetting on top of extreme vetting?
This does. I mean, you can find out the particulars of this from any source in the country.
Outside of the right-wing sources.
Exactly, outside of Democratic Perspective. But so the Democratic Perspective I want to give is that this has huge impact on people that I know, friends, acquaintances, relatives that have whatever sort of status that appears to be under attack from its own country. That's the part that bothers me. If you're Mexican and you could be legal and yet you still feel, and I'm hearing from friends, that what's going on? I feel attacked by my own country. Whether it's Mexican, whether you got parents with immigrant status, legal or not, it's a scary, scary time for them.
The worst part of it was they expanded it to the ban to include people that were here working with green cards that were in the country legally.
500,000 people it would extend it to. Right?
And had gone, the ones who were detained had gone back to their country of origin or had gone out of the country on business.
Right.
And their families are in the U.S., their home's in the U.S., their job is in the U.S., and so they suddenly, without warning, get detained at the airport.
They built their life here and contribute as much as anybody, probably more, and they are stuck in Iraq or in Iran. That's what I mean. These people are
Google called back all its foreign employees to the U.S.
Well, that's it. Tech relies on these people.
The one of the great things that came out of it was the CEO of Starbucks announced that because of this ban on refugees that he is committing Starbucks to hiring, I think it's 10,000 refugees around the world at Starbucks facilities. Because this leaves, there are millions of refugees that are war and economic refugees.
Let me hit you guys with a million-dollar question here, because one of our congressional representatives has said that Donald Trump is mentally ill. What's your take on that?
Well, the 25th Amendment, yeah, absolutely. The 10th Amendment, the 25th Amendment maybe will save us. Paul Krugman wrote a great New York Times piece that our institutions won't save us. But there's plenty of people down at the coffee shop that believe they will. There's plenty of people at the real estate offices that believe they will. And there's plenty of lawyers that believe that our institutions are going to save us. And but with things like the Patriot Act in place and the Republicans' unwillingness to apply the Constitution to the president does hamper that a little bit. Yeah, if he's we got article after article coming out of how crazy Donald Trump is.
By psychiatrists who have diagnosed him from.
We're talking
from
about Harvard, Yale. We're talking about the most respected people in the industry, men and women.
The nice things they've said about him is that he's an extreme narcissist with sociopathic tendencies. The worst things they've said about him, he's a sociopath, and I think it was pretty clear during the whole run up to the election. This should not come as a surprise to anyone.
The mechanisms of the 25th Amendment are rusty, unclear, I guess.
The news I want to talk about too that I think is getting lost is it came out on Friday or Saturday that Steve Bannon is basically running the White House, and that. The ban was Rudy.
Explain who he is, Gary.
Steve Bannon was the founder or the editor of, before he worked for the Trump campaign, he was the editor of Breitbart News, which is one of the notorious fake news sites. And he was the founder of the term alt-right, which was a repositioning, a renaming of white nationalism, white supremacy. And he was, without any oversight from Congress, he was put into the White House as Trump's special advisor,
chief strategist.
Right, and all of the stuff
put on the National Security Council.
Yeah, the thing I was getting to is that I think was the worst was that worst event is that the National Security Council. The chief of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has been removed except in meetings that pertain to his expertise.
Whatever that means.
And the National Security Advisor has been director of National Security.
Director of National Intelligence,
was removed for similar reasons and replaced by Steve Bannon and who else?
They've politicized the whole national security issue, which no president has done, certainly not to this extent, by putting his chief strategist as a whack job.
And I would say that it came out over the weekend that Trump's role model for being president is probably the worst president in American history, Andrew Jackson.
But we want to talk about 45,000 Americans dying a year for lack of health care through the Affordable Care Act. That's a much more fun topic.
I guess you could title the show sort of we're looking at the top of the news, but we want to shift because while Trump is doing his flim-flam and acting crazy and stuff, Paul Ryan and certain people in the House of Representatives are beginning a systematic attack on affordable health care, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. So there's two things going on. There's all this crazy Trump stuff, and then there's a methodical, narrow-minded, evil little plan. Now, last time they tried to do this, they had an excuse of the collapse of the economy in 2008. They said, we got to do everything right now because the economy's... Now they don't even have an excuse. They're just going to do it, except they're claiming that it's the Affordable Care Act has to be gotten rid of, and to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, Ryan says you have to change Medicare and Medicaid. Before we go on, that's probably true. Yeah, we should. We'd like to thank El Portal, local inn, small luxury inn. It's very pet friendly. It's one of the most pet friendly inns in the country, and we'd like to thank them for their support. I don't know what else to say about El Portal except it's a great place to have breakfast, and you're going to see us there in about an hour. So if you see a big table of people yelling and screaming, just come and say hello.
Just don't shoot us, please.
Yes.
El Portal is an amazing little place right here in the middle of Sedona that you it's worth checking out. We also want to mention that we have a second show on Saturdays. In the same moment, on Saturdays at noon, we are...
12:15, yep, to 12.
Excuse me,
12:15.
We are... Democratic Perspective is being rebroadcast. So if you're running off to work right now, you can hear the whole show, and you can hear what our guest has to say about Medicare and Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act and Social Security, because we're going to start asking them questions right now.
And the thing is, people say, well, I was listening to it, and I said, well, what about this? And they said, I didn't get the last 10 minutes because I got to work.
There you go.
So it gives you a chance to listen again. So let's reintroduce Steve Ryan. Steve Ryan's an attorney. He used to have a show here on CASM, right? Particularly legal advice and...
With another local attorney, we had a program called Legal Briefs a few years back that we were able to share the mic with Tom Tabak, which was a pleasure. I'm a local attorney, sole
practitioner. Really?
If there's any sucking up to do, we'll do it, okay?
Yeah.
Well, Tom's a good person to suck up to.
So. All right, there you go.
But anyway, my practice is focuses on estate planning, in addition real estate, and in addition commercial law. And I'm a sole practitioner, and I've had a number of clients over the years, both as a sole practitioner and with other attorneys, that have had to deal with the America's health care structure and its retirement structure, which is... relative to the rest of the world, very limited. But nonetheless, President Obama was able to get the Affordable Care Act passed in 2010. And that created a number of circumstances resulting in the fact that in 2015, 22 million people bought individual health insurance plans. Anecdotally, I had to have an individual insurance plan myself, And when I did it prior to the Affordable Health Care Act, or ACA, I paid approximately $560 a month for my plan, and that didn't include dental or optical or hearing aid coverage. When the Affordable Care Act came into play, I was able to participate in the marketplace, and I was able to have a better policy, a policy with a 20% copay instead of a 25% copay, policy that had a $1,500 deductible instead of a $2,500 deductible. I was able to pay nearly $400 a month less.
Wow.
So I speak from personal experience that the ACA is beneficial to people, and it's no surprise that many more are insured now than they used to be. However, the 22 million insured in 2015 represents only 7 to 8% of working age adults with health insurance. The vast majority of people covered by health insurance are through employer plans. The ACA requires employers with at least 50 employees to provide health insurance to employers, to employees working at least 30 hours a week. It requires employers to cover the children of covered employees until age 26. This has resulted in a better economic opportunities for those children in tough economic times in terms of new hires. The ACA required free screenings and certain preventive treatments as a part of employee coverage, and according to CNN, this has resulted in a increase in health by way of a decrease of emergency room services and so forth. ACA has prevented insurance companies from excluding from coverage or charging risk premiums for people with pre-existing conditions, which is enormously popular across the board. It has ended the insurance practice of imposing annual or lifetime caps on benefits, and it's placed limits on annual out-of-pocket spending over the time of its institution. It's mandated coverage of several benefits, including medication, maternity, and mental health. And particularly with women, it has requires private insurers to cover an array of preventive services vital to women's health, free of cost sharing for women, which includes contraception. It has slowed the increase in the cost of health care delivery by its structure, which requires healthy people to participate in the marketplace as well as people with pre-existing conditions. If people with pre-existing conditions remained in the marketplace, but healthy people were allowed to choose or not choose to participate or not in the healthcare marketplace, this would create a situation in which the risk equilibrium would place a hardship on insurers, which would require either a vast increase in premium costs or, as some would suggest, like the Kaiser Foundation, that the death spiral would occur in which insurers would just simply abandon the individual insurance markets and place their resources in the employer insurance aspect.
And employer insurance is still the biggest market, right? That's still covering the most people.
According to the Los Angeles Times, it is approximately 90 or 91% of the overall insurance market.
The last company I worked with had no pension plan and no medical insurance. And we would get these faxes in the thing, you know, $65 a month for medical insurance, and you'd find out there was a yearly limit to how much they would pay. There was a lifetime limit to how much they would pay, and there was a disease or injury limit to what they would pay. And the guys would run these things by me, and I said, well, look, if anything serious happens to you, you're screwed. I mean, to put it bluntly.
Well, caps are death sentences, for sure.
Yeah, and And because if you get something like leukemia, I mean, I know of one case, the medication is $6,000 a month. And basically, even the wealthy don't want to pay that. And don't you know, the example is, you know, your mother-in-law gets cancer. And even if you're a millionaire, wow, you know, you see your money heading right out the door. She goes broke. She goes into bankruptcy, and you get hit with these bills. So when you're 20, it's hard to see that you need medical insurance, right, Steve? But
yeah, and your health is much better than when you're 60. Under the circumstances, a person can plan as best they can to provide for their retirement years and so forth. They can participate as best they can in healthy activities and preventive maintenance and so on and so forth. But it's a person's health as one grows older. Just common sense tells you that it's the X factor that you really can't fully plan for. And the rest of the world, in many countries, without going into the weeds there,
we like weeds. We do weeds on this show.
Well, they help people that are in this situation as they grow older and so forth to deal with some of these uncertainties, especially in terms of health care, by providing single payer or sufficient subsidization in order to handle exigent circumstances like, for example, I have one client who has had to do a bone marrow transplant and go through that process, and the medication alone subsequent to that process, which was hundreds of thousands of dollars, was around $55,000 a month. Here in America, in France, where this person lives, it's $15,000 a month, and it's paid by his health insurance. So you don't know what you're going to get when you get older, and you try and plan ahead as best you can. But having a system in place like the Affordable Care Act, which eliminates the caps, as I had said, and has also gone a great deal towards minimizing what's known as a donut hole in the Medicare Part D coverage, which is the prescription drug coverage.
The day I quit AARP, it was when the day they supported the donut hole, and that was when you got to a certain point in prescription coverage, then you had to pick up the cost for X number of thousands of dollars, and then once again, your insurance would pick it up.
Yeah, you have coverage up to a certain point, and then you're on the hook for coverage until you reach the exigent circumstance or the.
And the ACA filled that.
Yes.
So you're telling us, and appreciate it, especially since one fifth of Americans, and especially Republicans, don't know the difference between the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare. They think it was different things.
Aren't they different, Mike?
No, they're not. One of the most important things, I'm going to slap him. One of the most important things he said was that the Affordable Care Act brought down the cost of health insurance overall through its structure. If everybody had participated, or more people had participated, as was hoped, then it would have gone down even. It would have controlled prices even more.
Extended,
so what's going to happen?
Medicare for 11 years. Made Medicare solvent 11 years longer than it was before it went into effect.
So what's going to now? What are they talking about? Well, you know, they're talking about getting rid of it without a replacement, which is like, I don't know what that's like.
What
that's
are
like,
they talking about, Stephen?
Well,
this
there
is really going to hurt people.
There is one. Yes, it is. You won't find me disputing that. There is one.
It seems to be a dispute that we're able to live with. That's going to hurt people. It's going to hurt thousands, tens of thousands of Americans.
I would point out that what Steve is talking about, the list that he read off of the benefits, is shows you how expansive this whole program is and how difficult it's going to be to unwind. And most of the things that it's done are extremely popular. that, you know, the
pre-existing cases, extremely popular. Children on your policy, extremely popular.
Giving or allowing people to get insurance, you know, 22 million people to get insurance that otherwise wouldn't have it, taking those people out of the emergency rooms
right.
for their, you know, ordinary chronic care.
Where we pay for their insurance anyway.
Yeah, where other people pay for it. You know, in extending, you know, making the policies better and more expansive and paying for preventative measures, all of those things are things that are highly popular, and you can't have those without the rest.
Let me ask, Steve, let me ask our guests, is there any reason for going after the – any financial reason, any legal reason for going – is it only political reasons that they're going after the ACA? Is this just –
That's beyond the scope of my ability. I don't know of any legal reason, and I don't know of any financial reason, and it seems to be a political reason. In order, and it could be just simply a matter of if you're going to do tax cuts, which Donald Trump has promised that he's going to do, tax cuts, you have to rob from
Peter. Corporate tax cuts, by the way.
You have to rob from Peter to pay Paul in order to do that. And with the Bush administration of two terms, plus the type of Congress that we've had for the last 6 years, you have kind of a very shallow reservoir from which to rob Peter to pay Paul. And one way that they can fund the tax cuts is by going after the social net and using the moral imperative that they want to shrink the social net in order to make people more responsible and self-sufficient and so forth. So,
but in your practice, this will have huge impact on individual incomes and individual livelihoods.
Well, people that are already, for example, the elderly who are already have limitations on their choices are going to you know, be even more limited. And when it comes to health care and health insurance, it's an even more drastic step. One of the things that there's a misconception about, other than the fact that over 50% of people don't know that the Affordable Care Act is the same as Obamacare,
yes.
For example. So that ties into your political message. But one of the things that Affordable Care Act does is beyond just providing health insurance for individuals and having certain requirements for employer health insurance. It directed the an agency called the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the CMS, to test and implement new approaches for Medicare to pay for health care providers and to bring about changes on how these providers organize and deliver care, including financial incentives designed to encourage collaboration and care coordination, something that didn't exist because of the marketplace's impetus on competition and not sharing information, and to improve services and reduce unnecessary services among providers. And examples that have already taken place or are in place include methods or incentives to reduce hospital readmissions, which is a significant cost savings,
right.
Not only for you know, sick people, but also for the providers, and to provide payments for multiple providers, bundling and rewards for meeting costs and quality of care targets. And given these reduction efforts, the average beneficiary individual health insurance,
right,
is spending $700 less for cost sharing and premiums in 2017 than without the ACA. And here's some more good information. Since the ACA was enacted in 2010 and through their efforts and requirements, 11.8 million Medicare beneficiaries received over $26.8 billion in drug discounts, with the discounts increasing with each year. Should the ABA, my point is, should the ABA be continued, the infamous prescription donut hole, which we've just discussed, where beneficiaries have to pay the full amount of the drug costs from the time they reach their initial coverage until they reach catastrophic coverage threshold, would disappear in 2020. Through the ACA, more than 40 million Medicare beneficiaries took advantage of at least one free preventative service, including 10.3 million Part C beneficiaries, which is the Medicare Advantage component to Medicare.
I think that's really...
taking advantage of the annual wellness visits. And then finally, continuation of the ACA would result in reduction of Medicare spending of $802 billion over 10 years.
Wow.
So we're talking about robbing Peter to pay Paul, and we're really robbing Peter and Paul to pay Paul.
I don't think you can emphasize the preventative, you know, aspect of this enough, because if you, I mean, it's only common sense. If you have some minor health problem that becomes chronic, and you don't have the ability to go to the doctor, or you know, you don't have insurance. And you keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, eventually it's going to become a big medical problem that's going to be far more expensive than if you were treating it all along.
And one of the most important points Steve just made, and I want him to make it again, is that the connection between ACA and Medicare and the savings that if you can give us that statistic again. And
it just to underline it, folks, the ACA, Obamacare, cut the expenses of Medicare providing coverage. It was a net positive. It's extended and strengthened Medicare. Most people really don't know this, and I think Steve has detailed pretty darn well how it works, but it's many different ways that it's contributed, right, Steve?
That's correct. We're not just talking about individual Medicare beneficiaries. The great conservative Paul Ryan, whatever you want to call it, paradox, in which he read too much Ayn Rand when he was working the soda fountains while enjoying Social Security disability when he was young, and using that as a moral imperative to increase self-sufficiency by removing the ACA and all its implications to Medicare, to Medicaid, and directly and indirectly to Social Security benefits, he and they are creating less self-sufficiency and more requirements by family and friends and so forth to have to change their plans, to change their retirement plans in many instances, and to accommodate a sick relative or a relative that needs to go to long-term nursing care and that sort of thing. I have a personal anecdote that these people that I know have a 98-year-old mother, which is amazing, but not as amazing as it used to be.
That's right.
Who now they've been taking care of her throughout the years, but she was fairly self-sufficient and was able to get by on her Social Security and Medicare, who subsequently needed nursing care service. And so they were able to fortunately find a good service and a good home for her. But they're paying approximately $1,100 a month in addition to what Access in Arizona, which is Arizona's poor version of Medicaid, and her Social Security benefits cover. So they're covering $1,100. And the brother or the other son is also paying approximately $600 a month. So you have here you have two groups of people, the son and his family, and then my friends and their family, who have had to alter their plans in order to cover for their mother's nursing care. And it's created it's defeated the moral imperative of Paul Ryan to make people more self-sufficient by creating more and disrupting their retirement plans.
So ask yourself, folks, do you have more freedom because you have Social Security, if you're on Social Security, or you have disability protection? Do you have more freedom or less freedom? Do you have more freedom when you have a affordable health care and you know that your medical things are covered? Or do you have less freedom? I would say that these government programs increase people's freedom to do things. Because without Social Security, a lot of people, I don't know what they would do.
Well, husband and wife collecting minimal Social Security, you know, are at least can live. Very basically, but can live. So you take away one or the other or both, or at least reduce it. It's such a minimum.
They wouldn't even have freedom to go to McDonald's.
I want to throw this back to Steve, though, because we talked about ACA. We talked a little bit about its relationship to Medicare, and it's a complex. But let's go to and don't forget, this is a political show. I don't forget for a second. So now we're going to talk about Social Security a little bit. We already mentioned a little bit that it works, that it still works, and that it can work. And so tell us, once again, on estate planning and impact on individual well-being, I don't get any attack on Social Security. It seems like this should be some sleepy little thing that everybody just leaves alone, that everybody recognizes to be funded, self-funded, and such a good thing for to allow people to age. Tell me, if you can, what's going on with Social Security as of this moment, either politically and financially?
Well, Social Security is, at this particular point, is solvent and has, but yet has been characterized as going broke or becoming bankrupt, or the trust fund drying up imminently by those very people like Paul Ryan that want to create, to privatize it, essentially. Yeah. So in my view, the Social Security falls into line with retirement insurance like Medicare and individual health insurance under this rubric that there is a morality involved. And I think to kind of tie your question, as I understood it, is where does this come from? Why are we not, instead of why are we concerned about losing ACA and seeing Medicare privatized and seeing Social Security privatized and seeing Medicaid essentially eliminated as a result? Why are we going in that direction rather than going in the direction of single-payer health insurance, bolstering with the few minor adjustments that Steve had mentioned earlier in the show, few minor adjustments in order to extend the life of Social Security and Medicare.
How about raising Social Security benefits? More and more people don't have pensions, or they have some pensions that are connected with the stock market that goes up and down. What about expanding Social Security so it really provides more of a living to the elderly?
I'd like to address the fundamental issue here, and that's this zombie lie that these programs are going bankrupt. This lie keeps coming back and coming back. It's a zombie. The fact is, you know, these programs are the biggest share of our national budget. That's true. But the fact is also that these things are constantly funded through taxes and withdrawals from your paycheck. And when I was, you know, operating independently with my own businesses, I had to pay both sides of FICA and Social Security. So there's constant income. It's one of our greatest sources of revenue, in addition to being the biggest, you know, cost and item in our budget. So it's a complete lie that they're going bankrupt. They are not. There's $3 trillion sitting in the Social Security Trust Fund right now. The only problem is that there is a danger going forward because they haven't raised the cap or made any adjustments for many years now. I think going back to Reagan, the only problem is that they won't be able to, as all of the baby boomers retire, this big bubble goes through, they won't be able to make full payments to all of the baby boomers under this, you know, particular situation.
Reagan supported raising the cap.
Yes.
On it.
The great Ronald Reagan.
The great conservative, he supported raising the cap, and yet...
But they all still give lip service to it, but they don't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's a bill going through Congress right now called a plan, you know, it's sponsored by Sam Johnson from Texas. It's a plan to permanently save Social Security. And his plan basically is to decapitate it and turn it into privatized investment. It's really, you know, they're going to couch this as updating or modernizing or saving, and it doesn't need to be saved. It just needs to be adjusted to modern times.
If you think the very wealthiest people are very, very wealthy now, the top 1%, wait till these Social Security and the rest of these things are privatized, and there's incredible stream of massive income deciding how the stuff gets invested. But let's get back to Steve and see if he's got some more details for us.
Well, the issue again, I think, that I can't emphasize enough is the interplay of the Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, and how they affect each other. Very, very quickly, there's a... the premiums for Medicare Part B, which covers physician visits, outpatient services, and so forth, are subject to copays and subject to a monthly premium by the enrollees or the covered people. And the monthly premiums for 2017 are $109 a month for 70% of the participants, while the remaining 30% will pay $134 a month. The reason is because the hold harmless rule, which requires that basically a person's Social Security check can't be reduced by virtue of an increase in Medicare premiums. It's called the hold harmless rule. And the reason why it came up this way is they've determined that the cost of living for Social Security for 2017 is 0.3%. Now, in a country with the GDP that we have and with the resources and the economy that we have relative to the world, 0.3% cost of living increase in Social Security underscores how woefully inadequate it is, and yet they want to privatize it.
And the problem with privatizing it, as I've experienced personally, is your investments can vanish overnight. You know, it's I lost a whole lot of money. I don't have a pension. You know, I had to save my retirement throughout my career.
Send your we're passing a collection pay for Gary.
Not exactly, but I lost, you know, huge portions of my retirement savings on two different occasions. So
do we have some announcements, Gary?
Yeah, I want to
make
a quick announcement for our sponsor, Democrats of the Red Rocks. Has their next meeting coming up on the 16th of February at 8 a.m. at Old Sedona Bar and Grill. And it should be a really interesting meeting because its subject is the pros and cons of the U.S. Electoral College, which is still a wound.
Failed to do its job.
A wound that's still bleeding for me. So the speaker is going to be a former judge, Charles B. Schudson, I believe.
We have lots of folks that support Democrats, Democratic Perspective. We have El Portal. We have Steve Segner at El Portal that
Bill
supports
Timmerman,
the show.
One of our
we have Bill
producers.
Timmerman, and we have Ledbetter Law that is often. So please check out our website, vvid.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.